Hey, y'all, it's Trina, and on this month's Hot Take, we are honoring Black Maternal Health Week, which happens from April 11th to 17th every year. It is a week to honor and raise awareness and uplift Black birthing folks and also advocate for Black birthing folks' rights to have healthy, safe deliveries and births. And beyond that, it's another topic that we're going to be talking about this episode around Black lactation support and Black breastfeeding. As you remember, about a year ago, there was this huge shortage of formula, right? It was during the height of COVID, and there was all this data about all this information and all this buzz that, like, we had a shortage of formula. And as with anything that happens in America, when something is bad happening, it always hits Black people at a higher rate. Black people were more significantly impacted by the lack of access to formula. And it begs the question, why, right? Like, why are more Black people needing more access to formula? And it has a long history in our nation around breastfeeding and how it has been intentionally disrupted by historical traumas, including slavery. When Black people, Black birthing folks at the time who were enslaved, were not allowed to breastfeed their own children, but were forced to breastfeed their white owners' children. And so it impacted and interrupted the connection that Black mothers at the time had relationships with their children and their own ability to provide that important nutrient to their own children, right? So that was a process of disrupting that. And then even today, when you think about the ways that formula has been commercialized and pitched towards Black families, right? It was labeled as, marketed as the more sophisticated route, right? And when you start looking at the ingredients and what are some of the impacts, right? Rather than saying it hasn't been encouraged for Black people to breastfeed, I remember when I decided to breastfeed that there were not a lot of folks in my family, in my community who were breastfeeding, very limited. It was at sometimes experienced as taboo. That was over 10 years ago, and things have changed, and we have so much more resource and information about the benefits of breastfeeding and why it's healthy. And although I won't say that formula is bad, right? Because formula is necessary for some folks and it's needed. Sometimes you need it to supplement. Also acknowledging that breastfeeding could be a privilege in terms of like having the time and the resource, especially for a lot of folks who are, you know, working in part-time ways or who are working in places where they don't offer a lactation room or a breast pump room or any kind of supports, right? Sometimes it can be hard. I remember when I was breastfeeding, I went back to work, and I remember having to like pump in the most awkward places. I had to pump in a bathroom. One time I was pumping in my car in between site visits when I was working at different schools. I remember coming home and gorged because I didn't have a chance to pump. And so I just really appreciate all the, you know, breastfeeding advocates who have really fought to make sure that there are parameters in place to make sure that people have the access to this right, a right to take care of your children, to feed your children, to nurture your children in the ways that you want. And so on this episode, we're going to be speaking with a breastfeeding expert and lactation consultant who's going to talk to us about the historical impacts of slavery and white supremacy on Black people breastfeeding and talk about what we can do to encourage more Black folks to breastfeed or chest feed. Because it is a beautiful way to build relationship with your child and also a beautiful way to support their health and growth and for them to thrive. And that's what we're all about here at Parenting for Liberation. So check out this episode. Raising Black children in the United States can be really scary. And as a Black mother, I realized I was parenting from fear. And I wanted to make a commitment to parent for liberation. You are listening to Parenting for Liberation podcast, and I am your host, Trina Green Brown. Each month, I'm joined by other Black parents, and we discuss our own journeys to push past our fears so that we can raise our beautiful Black children to be whole, free, and liberated.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed.
Hey, y'all, this is Trina with Parenting for Liberation. And on this episode, we speak with professional breastfeeding consultant Lydia O'Boyd. Lydia is an experienced breastfeeding mother who specializes in supporting families who are expecting or currently breastfeeding. She holds multiple certifications. I'm going to name a couple. She's an international board certified lactation consultant. And one of my faves that she has is she's a certified lactation educator and expert, and she's also a doula. She is the co-founder and faculty of Black, B-L-A-C-K, of the Black Course, and it is a full-scope lactation and breastfeeding education course made by and for Black people and folks supporting Black breastfeeding families. Welcome to the podcast, Lydia.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, so I'm excited to have you. Lydia is a part of the AIM Collective with me out here in South LA. Has been doing incredible work around breastfeeding. We just wrapped up Black Maternal Health Week, and so really wanted to have this conversation because part of Black Maternal Health is, you know, after delivery, about how do we sustain and nourish our children. And one of those ways is through breastfeeding. So, Lydia, how did your passion for breastfeeding begin? Like, what has been your own personal journey as a breastfeeding mother?
Well, I had a baby at 28 weeks, and I spent 3 months in the NICU counting breaths and being connected to a pump. I didn't get to hold my baby until he was six weeks, and then I didn't get to put him to the breast until I think he was closer to 2 months. And when I did it, he was still connected to machines and tubes, and he was getting oxygen support. Nobody prepared me for that. And I didn't have the type of support that I have, that I give. And so when the opportunity arose, I said, this is a way for me to right the wrong for me.
Yeah. You know, they say the personal is the political, right? And like our personal lived experiences can inform our work, our life's purpose. Sometimes it can activate us to become activists or community advocates. And so appreciate you being inspired and by your own personal journey. I am also a breastfeeding parent, and I also had a struggle with breastfeeding early on. I didn't actually know that I needed to like wear these shields to actually support lactation. And I remember being so engorged and like struggling so hard. And it really did require me moving past the shame and embarrassment of like not knowing how to do something or not feeling like you know what to do to support your child. And I could imagine that many parents, when their children are little, like little newborns, you feel so like no one prepared me for any of this. And mind you, I took as many classes as I can. I took the prenatal classes at the doctor's office. I took Lamaze breathing classes. I took prenatal yoga classes, but I never took a lactation support or anything. And so right. I didn't even know it existed until mm-hmm. I tried and tried, because I had made a commitment like I'm going to breastfeed, and I couldn't. I mean, I didn't know how at the moment. Mm-hmm. And I remember like having to push my pride to the side and calling my cousin who had a child who was like maybe like 6 or 7 months, and she was breastfeeding. I'm like, come to my house and show me how you breastfeed. And even that made, you know, it made her a little uncomfortable, because she's like, I got to pull out my whole boob and show you my titty. And I'm all like, yes, I need you to show me how you're doing it. Like, and then she showed me like real time, because all the imagery and videos weren't people that look like me or.
Mm-hmm.
And then I learned something about my own body that I had never known, right? About my breast and my nipples and how the shape and the different ways that our bodies are, that mm-hmm. they have different ways of breastfeeding. And mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember that. And so I say I appreciate you taking your passion and like making it a life work to actually support other people, because I don't imagine everybody would do what I was able to do, which is to like call people and say, hey, come to my house and show me, and then let me show you my boob. But then like us inspecting and figuring it out, like we came to this conclusion together, like, oh, I think it's this. And then I had to have an appointment with a lactation consultant at the hospital. And I realized that me and my cousin figured it out. So shout out to my cousin. I'm not going to put her name out there because she probably don't want people to know that I was doing breast exchange stories. But yeah, it's so important to have that support. So tell me about your work as a lactation consultant and how that experience is when you support families.
Well, I love the work I do. I believe it's village work. I believe it's village support, village love. And it's just a part of us healing community. And so what I normally do is I connect with families in an ideal situation. I connect with them prenatally. And I teach a 3-hour prenatal breastfeeding class once a month. And then I provide lactation support to families once they have their babies. So either I'm checking in just to make sure everything's going well, or once I've gotten to this level, people usually only call me when something is wrong. And so I have to put on a cape and come run to fix it as best as I can. And so I address normal things like a latch, a position. I answer questions about supply. And then there's those big things. There's anatomy issues for mom and baby. There can be results from delivery. You know, you mentioned Black Maternal Health Week. When we have those traumatic births, it does affect breastfeeding. You know, for those folks who made it out and they survived, but it was a bit tricky, those instances can affect breastfeeding. And so that I'm the person that comes in and addresses those issues. And I work with the team. I am part of that family's care team. And I'm there for the long haul. So once we get you past the rough times, then just, you know, our check-ins, the community. So, you know, touching bases about the baby's feeding development, the changes that's going on in the lactating body. Yeah. And then in addition to that, like you said, I teach and I do two different support groups, and I teach a couple classes for folks who are breastfeeding. So one is for weaning. And then another one is returning back to work. And then I'm just about to launch a class on your love life while breastfeeding.
Oh, my goodness. All of the things that you do, I'm like, I needed that. Oh, yeah, I needed that. I needed to know how to wean. I needed to know how to, like, return to work and figure out a way to still maintain my supply and pumping and things of that nature. And, oh, love life, because when you have a child on the boob all the time, someone, people being jealous. So all of those classes sound so important and so necessary. And I'm glad to hear that, like, the support is available prior to birthing, right? Like I said, like, I realized I had a problem after the situation and didn't have any support around lactation prior to. So I'm glad that it is available early and folks have access to it. For the folks who are doubters out there, can you share what are some of the key benefits of breastfeeding, not only for the child, but also for the parent?
We can take it broader to the community.
To the community, yes.
I'm going to start high today. So when we look at breastfeeding and its benefits from a bioethical standpoint, what we know is for every 2 years that we breastfeed, that mom ultimately positively affects the next two generations that's coming out of her womb.
Wow.
And so it's that, you know, that proverb about the eggs. So we're seeing it's not limited to decreased risk of reproductive cancers for mom and her daughter. Okay, so for every 6 months, we know for every 6 months of exclusive breastfeeding, we're reducing the risk of reproductive cancers for the mom. And then that goes on to the baby. We're seeing decreased incidences or better management of chronic disease like high blood pressure. Diabetes is huge. Autoimmune issues. We're seeing decreased incidences or better management for postpartum and mood and anxiety disorders. Then there's those more normal things. When we look at breastfeeding, because it is the biological norm, we're seeing those are the normal IQ scores and those SAT scores. We're seeing better brain development, language skills, eye-hand coordination. So those college scholarships for any kind of sport. we're seeing better bones for mom later in life. Now, during pregnancy and breastfeeding, we may see some weakness in the bones, but later on, we have less incidence of osteoporosis for breastfeeding moms. And so then when we want to look, go over into the larger family, when dads are involved and active, we're seeing less incidence of postpartum depression for dads. When we keep them involved and they're doing their skin to skin and they're in that protective state while we're breastfeeding in bed, we're seeing that they're releasing more estrogen, which we have discovered that is linked to decreased incidences of Alzheimer's and dementia. And then when we look at it from a global standpoint, we have, ideally, we have less waste, and we're having less incidences of missed work. Our kids are not as sick, not to say that breastfed babies don't get sick, they do. And we've seen some benefits with COVID. We know that breast milk and the breastfeeding body is building immunities and antibodies against COVID. But we also know that our breast milk is filled with a whole bunch of anti stuff. So it has antivirals, right? So we think of what are virals. The COVID, HIV, herpes, all of those things, the regular flu, right? It has antibacterials, antimicrobials. It has anti-cancer agents in there. It has skin healing agents. It's just full of a whole bunch of stuff. And so we can call it manna from on high if we wanted to.
Manna from on high. I've heard it called liquid gold. When we talk about black folks, they be calling it that chocolate milk. Yes.
That's it.
All this, listen, you better give us all the science. You better give us all the data about, listen, breastfeeding helps to, you know, cure things, prevent things, help folks just have healthier, more sustainable lives. And so I really appreciate hearing it from, like, not only just the individual person, like child, parent, but societally and as it, like, from a larger perspective, right? You even talked about, like, waste management. I'm like, yes, it helps to prevent climate change, especially us here in L.A. when we was getting snow. It was so unfamiliar. So knowing all the benefits, right? And I really appreciated that in your bio, you talk about being a lactation expert, right? Thinking about what are thinking about Black folks in particular in the Black community, what are some common fears, misconceptions that are held about breastfeeding, and how can we address those fears and counter those misconceptions? Because, you know, I remember breastfeeding. Like, my kid is 14, so that was 14 years ago, and I was one of the few people at the time. Like I told you, I called on my cousin, that one cousin that I know that was breastfeeding, right? It wasn't like I could be like, hey, family, let's have a meeting, all the breastfeeders. It wasn't as common. It's becoming more of a dialogue about the benefits, and we're starting to hear about it more in the last decade. And I know you've been doing this work for multiple decades, so I'm not saying that the work hasn't been done, but I feel like the conversation has rose. I remember feeling like an odd person, like an oddball out when it came down to choosing to breastfeed, because I was making things more complicated and people couldn't babysit because I didn't have enough milk pumps. You know, there was like all the ways that my choice made things harder for other people. Right. That was one of the misconceptions. Right. Or things that people were naming. So I'm curious, like, particularly in the Black community, right, because that's who our audience is, Black parents, what are some of those fears and misconceptions? And I know that you know that it's historically rooted, so also wanting you to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so just like you said, for those of us who descend from slavery in this country, breastfeeding was huge because it became a huge marketing. It was big business. And I encourage anyone who really wants to delve into this is to do some research. Read not only Medical Apartheid by Margaret Washington, but also They Were Her Property by Dr. Stephanie Jones Rogers. And Dr. Stephanie Jones Rogers, she has a whole chapter dedicated to wet nursing. And it's chapter 4. And
explain wet nursing for folks who are listening.
Wet nursing is actually, it's a common practice. And when we get into, you know, we're talking about slavery here. And just like with slavery, it was a worldwide practice, right? And it was just when we got to the pathology of the United States and the Americas, it turned into something, you know, way worse than what was practiced around the country. And so wet nursing is using your enslaved person to feed. So, of course, if they are enslaved, this is not agreed upon. It's not mutually beneficial. It was big business. It was part of capital. And what They Were Her Property talks about is that a lot of times when we think of slavery in this country, we just think of, you know, white men. And we don't look at the percentage of white women who benefited from this. And it's a very salient and important point, because when you look at lactation today, the field of lactation, it's very, very white. The United States Lactation Consultant Association did a survey when we were going into COVID, and what they found is that less than 1% is non-white. They are non-white, middle-class women with at least one degree. So that's very telling. So what does that mean for us when we're talking about what are our concerns with breastfeeding? One, because we don't see ourselves. And the little bit that our families do see, and that's our elders, is that there is probably a tie to wet nursing within the bounds of slavery. Okay. For others throughout the Black diaspora, it may not be that. For them, they're looking at breastfeeding from the U.S. standpoint of, no, there's something probably better. We're going to give formula because that's what Americans do. So both of those are very dangerous. When we look at it from the ancestral traumatic standpoint, it's we don't have the elders to teach us. Like you said, you had to talk to your cousin. Where was your grandmother in this? What messaging did you receive from your grandmother? If you are somebody my age who was born coming out of civil rights, my mom was breastfed. She was born by a midwife at home, but she had me just out of civil rights. She had a twilight birth, and she was given a shot to drive her milk, and breastfeeding wasn't even an option for her. And so when I got pregnant 26 years ago, I was told by my mom that that is something that white women do. That is not something that we do. You will not do that. And it wasn't until I had the preemie and that kicked up in her. And she was like, okay, we're going to breastfeed. Didn't know how to help me. She was like, I don't know how to help you. And that, like, to have broke her heart. Her mom was gone, and that she had no one to turn to. So if you multiply that across the Black community, even here in Los Angeles, and people look at Los Angeles like we don't have any problems, and that's so not true when it comes to breastfeeding. We don't have the ancestral, for many of us, we don't have the ancestral connection that's being passed down. So my families are now creating a new cultural family tradition surrounding breastfeeding. And so it looks different, but we still have those gaps in. We have elders and grandparents and parents who are being birthed into grandparents that are having to learn, and they really don't have anything to pull from. So there needs to be some healing. So as we're welcoming this new life and learning this new tradition, we're having to sit with the fact that there's still some trauma here. As much as we want to get away from the fact that we're still dealing with trauma from something that happened, we think it's so far away from us, but it's still here. And then when we look at the institutionalized systematic racism within the medical industry, we're then slapped in the face with it again. So if they're not listening to us when we're birthing, do you think that they're listening to us when we want to breastfeed?
Right.
And now when we're saying, I just need to be able to make it out of the hospital alive, if I'm having problems with latch, I'm not going to say anything because that may mean I got to stay in here and I'm trying to get out of here with me and my baby alive. Right. So that's a huge thing. And then we have to then take it over to some of these other areas. So we've made it out the hospital alive. Who do we then go to? La Leche League is very, very white. Right. Mm-hmm. We are doing work. We are doing work to diversify La Leche, but and they're coming along kicking and screaming. So then we've had to come. So then we've had to do this. And this is then when I go back to that. Back to the lactation field is very, very white. And so those of us who are where I am, we've had to do a lot of work. And we've had to deal with our own trauma to get here to be able to help our community. And we're the ones that have to help. So we're the ones that can address, right? And we have to mine this, we have to walk through this minefield, finessing it, because we're the ones that understand the myths of if I breastfeed, my baby's going to be spoiled. Nobody's going to want to watch my baby. That breast milk is not as thick as the formula. Using if they're listening to the white people when really they're listening to me, and she telling you not to put no cereal in the baby's bottle, and you can't get no sleep at night. How are you going to go back to work? How are you going to go back to work with that baby attached to you? And the whole thing is you don't want that baby to be attached to you. And we don't realize that that statement alone goes all the way back to slavery days. And why don't we want our babies to be attached to us? Is because I may not be here. They may sell me off. They may take my baby. And that's exactly what they did. There was many times where a mom was a med nurse in those good plantations, right? Those good ones, the Clinton of the plantations. They would be rented out and were able to come home. The problem is that they may come back and one of their babies may have been sold off for profit. And you had to come back with the money in hand from your wet nursing job and you got nothing and you lost the baby. And if you were too broke up from losing your baby, then that put you in jeopardy and it put the rest of your kids in jeopardy. They called it the sulks. And you couldn't cry. You got about 5-10 minutes, fix your face. And God forbid if that baby was tied to, you know, the enslavers, then it was even more cruel. And so we don't understand how it is tied to that when we say some of the things that we say.
Yes. Come on with the examples of post-traumatic slave syndrome. You literally just described it. Beautifully. And it's the kind of work that P4L talks about often, about how some of the things that we say and some of the choices that we make that we think are just like, it's just what black people do. Like, we've always done this. We don't necessarily dig deep to understand, well, why did we do that? And what choices were people making out of their traumatic experiences that they were living in? They were creating adaptive behaviors in order to survive the trauma of enslavement, right? Making choices to not have that latched relationship, because that relationship, if a slave owner sees that connection, intentionally wants to sever it, right? If your child is thriving too much, then they're going to want to sell your child for profit, right? So like, even black parents denigrating their kids, or, you know, you said something like fix your face, right? That's something that was done to us. Whippings are things that were done to us. not having healthy bonding relationships that was done to us. And it's helpful for us to like be able to go back and look at it, very painful and traumatic, but also to untether ourselves to it in this current moment, because we don't have to continue to practice those things that were actually detrimental to us as a people and were used to denigrate, to tear us apart, to make us feel small, right? And to make us not feel worthy. And so I really appreciate the work that you're doing. It's so grounded and rooted in resisting the oppressive forces of our past and really about shifting us to really thinking about the ways that we can reclaim our ancestral ways of being prior to enslavement. Prior to, like, we are Black prior to slavery, we are African, and that is not necessarily, like, breastfeeding is the common norm, right? And also, like, knowing how society has, American society has intentionally marketed and pushed formula, right? Like, has said that it's the better choice, and utilize a lot of Black families and stuff in the advertisement, right? And creating a dependency on formula. And not to say that formula is not an important, as you call it, an important medicine that can be used to help supplement or to support families who have challenges with breastfeeding. But knowing that breastfeeding is a way of our ancestors that we can return to and reclaim and to disassociate all the negativity and the pain that has become attached to it.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. That part. I know when we were in the thick of the formula shortage and we had those terror syrup recipes going around. And, you know, I had to have conversations with some of my colleagues. It's like, you need to check your tone because you're being disrespectful. So if it's disrespectful for us to say I'm not my grandparents, you know, I'm not my ancestors when it came to slavery, that was disrespectful. We have to be mindful of how we have those conversations because our ancestors did what they needed to do. We, fortunately, because of the strides that they made, you know, we don't have to pull the carol syrup out. Let's have a conversation. Let's, before we get frustrated with folks because they're pulling out those carol syrup recipes, let's say, what are we doing? Where have we missed the opportunity to make sure that people know, that families know, that parents know that there is support from somebody that looks like them? And, you know, I'm always like, why did you not know about Miss Lydia? How are you here in LA and didn't know about Miss Lydia? That's an issue. That's my weight that I need to carry, not you were so simple-minded that you just pulled out the carol syrup recipe. You were trying to feed your baby.
Right.
I'm in a field that's founded on feeding your baby. So if you didn't know that there was lactation support, that's my fault, not your fault. And so
I don't even know if it's your fault, Miss Lydia.
No. I mean, I got to do a better job.
I hear you taking some responsibility and accountability for, like, how can you raise more awareness? But I also, you know, want to acknowledge, like it's systemic, right? It's systemic why people don't know that you exist, right?
Absolutely.
It's intentional. So what do you think can be done to, like, increase awareness and education around breastfeeding, the benefits of breastfeeding, especially to those families? Like you talked about, during the shortage, folks are turning to, you know, recipes when they could be turning to, if that's an option for them, breastfeeding. So what do you think can be done to raise awareness so people know Miss Lydia out here in these streets?
We need to start having these conversations all the time. Breastfeeding needs to be normalized. We need to bring it back to our cultural norms. It needs to be part of Black Eyed Peas on New Year's. It needs to be, okay, you know, we're going to have some gumbo. It needs to be part of that.
Like a cultural way of being, like a cultural norm.
That's it. Yeah. We need to, we're so quick, and we have to improve on it. So stop being so quick to give somebody a herbal supplement to help their milk supply, but make sure that they have lactation support. You know, we have we have a new group, of granny midwives that's, you know, coming through these doors, right? And they need to know that Black birth workers, we're doing it. And while it may not be on, you know, Miss Maybelline, who did everything, she caught your baby, she helped you with your breastfeeding, she helped you if you need to get rid of something, and she came and took care of you, she bought you a pot of greens, all that. So it may not fall all on Miss Maybelline now. It may be Kimberly Durton and Allegra Hill from Kindred Space, our one and only Black birth center here in Los Angeles, and their midwives. It may be the AIM program that's providing Black doulas for Black families. And then it may be Miss Lydia, who's doing Black breastfeeding support here in Los Angeles. That's what it may look like. And also what it also needs to happen is that those people who want to say that they're our allies and our accomplices, that means that they're probably going to have to get their ego out of the way. Mm-hmm. And it's not, when I say accomplices and allies, I'm not just talking about, you know, white folks. I'm talking about everybody else who is not Black. That we need to understand that we need to be able to help our folks. Not to say that you can't, but there are some spaces and there are some things where you need to step back and give space to us, and you need to refer to us and say, you know what, I think you probably would benefit from a Miss Lydia, or you may benefit from a Kindred Space, or instead of me trying to be your doula, maybe I need to refer you to one of the many Black doulas that's in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. So that we can have that cultural congruency and that cultural relatability and really start working in village. So that those are the things, I think, just some of it. And that's just scraping the barrel. We're exactly. doing a lot of work, you know, Black maternal health, Black breastfeeding week at the end of August, and us participating in the rest of the weeks in August, us showing our faces the first week in August when it's World Breastfeeding Awareness Week, and then partnering with the Native community for Indigenous Milk Medicine Week, and partnering with the Asian American Asian Pacific Islander Native Hawaiians for their week, and acknowledging and supporting them and having those connections. Because I'm going to tell you, the Native community has been a true blessing to Black breastfeeding. And you know, anybody knows Miss Lydia, I don't talk about these unities that everybody else does, but that's one that I will say that has been a blessing. And we can actually say that we've linked arms and they've looked out for us and we've looked out for them. But there's a level of respect. I'm not taking your stuff and you're not taking my stuff. And that's where some of the issues I see when it comes to getting the word out is, I don't need you to use my music to teach my folks about this. I need you to do you and let me do me, to share the word, to share about Black breastfeeding, that lactation support is available. You don't have to appropriate our culture to do that. You can just say that lactation support is here for everyone. Right. Those kind of things. Yeah, but don't get me started, because I'll start fussing about a whole bunch of stuff.
You like, here are the things that could be done. I hear you talking about the ways that, like, some of the supports that can happen, like around allies and mm-hmm. folks who could show up in solidarity and really shouting out the Indigenous community for being true allies and solidarity with Black breastfeeding. You know, you were talking about ways that other folks can support breastfeeding. I'm curious about how can, like, in the family and in the community, right, from within, mm-hmm. how can, like, partners, family members, and other loved ones mm-hmm. be part of the breastfeeding support process?
Mm-hmm. Get educated. Come to a support group. Take a class. Take a prenatal class. Don't let that mom go to that prenatal class by herself. Go with her. Then when the baby comes, make sure you take her to that appointment. Sit in on that virtual consult. go with her to the doctor, have your own questions, right? And say, well, we talked to a lactation consultant, and okay, so you're saying this, okay, take your notes, and then go back to the lactation consultant so that you can hear what she's hearing, because her brain is overwhelmed.
Right.
And then we also have to then look at the benefits for everyone. We say that our old people are not there. Our elders are there. And when we can get them on board with breastfeeding, they are the best. When I tell you Mama Boyd is the biggest breastfeeding supporter that there is, child, and that's from 26 years, when we get our elders on board, they are so proud of their young parents. Look at that baby with just the juiciest they want to be getting all that breast milk. I don't know. I don't if that if I was the mom, girl, I'd be almost in tears. Mm. And as an emerging elder, I try my best to do that. When I sit in a room in a consult and that baby is milk drunk, I sit back. I said, I don't know who else's boobs did it. So who got their baby like this? And they linger for a minute, and I was like, I need you to say it. Who got their baby dissatisfied? It wasn't my boobs. And if the now grandmother is there, she sees it, and she's able to replicate that in her own way when she gets home. And I've heard so many stories of, you know, newly birthed grandparents, and how they've taken ownership of that. My grandbaby is breastfeeding so smart, just so smart, and so healthy. We have to be able to give that to us. For dads, we have to make room for them. They need to be in the classes. They need to be in the office visits. They need to have the information. I did a Facebook chat one year for Black Breastfeeding Week, and I had about 10 or 12 dads, and all but one, they were all Black, they all but one said that they were never asked about the decision to breastfeed, nor were they asked for help, input, or they had a say in the decision to wean. But they all said that they wanted their babies to breastfeed. The only thing was they didn't know anything about it. They just instinctively knew that breastfeeding was healthy for their babies. And 9 times out of 10, our dads, and that's our dads across the board. So our grandfathers, our uncles, our brothers, they want these babies to be healthy. And they really do want the babies to get the best nutrition that they possibly can. They all don't understand how that works, and they have their own issues as far as, you know, modesty and things like that. But getting that milk into that baby is what they want. And how do we support them? We have to get them educated. So for our immediate support team, which is our family, we need to get them educated. We have to make space for them. And they need to be able to see it themselves, because if you can't see it, how are you going to support it? Because you don't know what you're supporting.
Yeah. So important. Such good information. Now, you said they need to get educated, okay? And you said that you have several classes and you drop in a new class. Before I let you go, tell folks how they can find Miss Lydia so they can get their education.
You can find me on the World Wide Web at LydiaOBoyd.com. You can find me across social media at Lydia O'Boyd, IBCLC, and that's for the Internationally Board Certified Lactation Consultant. You can email me, Lydia at LydiaOBoyd.com. Hit me up, send me a message. Now, I don't do consults in my DMs. I probably will tell you to schedule some time with me. But send me an email. You can send me an email, and we can see what we can do. I do clinical hours at MLK at their East Compton Clinic. I'm here 8 to 5 most days, and we take all of the insurances. So you have a couple ways to get to me. And if I can't see you, I can find somebody else who can see you.
Yes. Thank you so much, Lydia, for making sure that our Black babies get nature's nutrients, and supporting Black birthing folks and breastfeeding folks, and also their families, their partners, their spouses, their and our community at large, right? We know that this is so important, and this is about Black maternal health, and it requires all of us to be of service to breastfeeding parents. So I appreciate you for your work, your years and years of work and service in support of Black families.
Well, thank you. Thank you for listening to me. I appreciate it.
Of course. I mean, you got all the wisdom. When you came through with all the science, I was like, well, okay. I'll always listen to you. All right. I know that you have a hard stop at 3, so I won't keep you more. I really appreciate you taking the time, though. That means a lot.
No, thank you. I'm honored to be here.
Thanks. Okay. Talk to you soon.
All right.
Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to this episode of Parenting for Liberation. I hope something on this episode will inspire you on your parenting journey. Please like us on all social media at Parenting for Liberation. Until next time, let's get free, y'all.